Well, as James has explained at the beginning, this is a series on the fruit of the Spirit, and I have been allocated the subject of patience. And in fact, I unwittingly demonstrated some impatience because I don't know whether you noticed, but I thought the hymn was over and I took my glasses off too soon and decided not to put them back on again for the last verse. As we're just a few days away from the general election, I'm going to share this quotation about patience from a former prime minister. "I am extraordinarily patient, provided I get my own way in the end." Those are the words of Margaret Thatcher. Well, the Bible teaching about patience has at the heart of it God's way, not ours. He is exceedingly patient. It says in 2 Peter chapter 3, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. Bear in mind that the Lord's patience means salvation." So the fact that God allows human life to continue in this sinful world is a demonstration of his patience. And by his Spirit, we have the capacity to be patient. And sometimes God uses events in our lives to train us in patience. Now, in the New Testament, there are two Greek words for patience. One means endurance, and the other, which is used in the description of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, means long-suffering. But the two are connected and not dissimilar. In Colossians 1, verse 11, Paul uses them together, where he says, "Being strengthened with all power, according to God's glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience." Endurance is accepting without complaining an ongoing difficulty and trusting God. That may be an illness where we cannot blame anybody. Long suffering is where something is inflicted upon us by others which we tolerate and are ready to overlook or forgive. And the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis is a demonstration of both types of patience. He was, and I know that you will know the story of Joseph, but we're going right through it this morning. I was going to be very facetious and say I should take half an hour on each episode, but you'll be home for supper, but don't worry. Joseph was treated appallingly by his brothers and later falsely accused and imprisoned. Joseph endured so much but was gratified by the knowledge that God was with him, and later, as he discovered, it was all for a good purpose. Now, his story begins in chapter 37 of Genesis. It resumes in chapter 39 and continues uninterrupted to chapter 50 at the end of the book. It's about overcoming evil with good, not engaging in personal revenge, but trusting God throughout. The starting point of Joseph's ill treatment is his kidnapping by his 10 older brothers, who were jealous of him because he was the favorite of their father, Jacob. And their resentment of Joseph was fueled by three events. First, Joseph gave his father a bad report about them, which I think we should assume was justified. Second, he told them of a dream he had had, which suggested that one day they would all bow down before him. And third, he told them of another dream, which suggested the same thing. Much later, we find that those dreams were prophecies fulfilled by God. And when the brothers seized him, the original intention was to kill him. And years later, they would reflect on their callousness. In chapter 42, verse 21, they said to one another, "Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen." They would have gone ahead were it not for the fact that the eldest brother, Reuben, briefly absent at the time the plot was hatched, persuaded them to spare Joseph's life and instead throw him into an empty cistern and abandon him there. But that was still terrifying for Joseph, because he could have died there. Who would have heard his cries? Would he have been found in time? As you know, his brothers decided to pull him out, not through compassion, but for financial gain. Some Midianite merchants happened to pass by on their way to Egypt, so the brothers were able to sell Joseph to them as a slave. And then once in Egypt, the Midianites were able to sell Joseph on to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. And this marked a significant change for the better for Joseph. I'm just going to read a few verses from chapter 39. It says, "The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate." How wonderful. Things are looking up for Joseph. He's in a good position, well appreciated. But this came to an abrupt end when Potiphar's wife, who found Joseph physically attractive, falsely accused him of attempted rape when he rejected her advances. And Potiphar believed his wife and put Joseph in prison. And initially, we find this out from Psalm 105, verse 18, Joseph's feet were bruised with shackles and his neck was put in irons. So once again, Joseph was abandoned and left with nothing. But God was still with him. I'm going to read a few more verses from chapter 39. "While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did." So the blessing that God gave to Joseph when he entered Potiphar's service was given to him again through the warder. And for us, we can bear this in mind, that when an unpleasant change of circumstances is forced upon us, it doesn't mean God will withhold his blessings. We can patiently wait upon him. Now, sometime later, two officials of Pharaoh, his chief cupbearer and chief baker, joined Joseph in prison. They had offended Pharaoh, but we're not told how. And one night, they each had a dream which troubled them, and they wanted to know what their dream meant. And at this point, we discover that Joseph was not only himself a dreamer, but he was enabled by God to interpret other people's dreams. And he offered to do this for these two men. So they gave him the details, and he interpreted them as follows. Within 3 days, the cupbearer would be restored to his position, but the baker would be executed. And both those prophecies were fulfilled. Now, the significant thing, and relevant to the subject of patience, is this. Joseph said to the cupbearer, "When all goes well with you, remember me, show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison." And chapter 40 ends with these words. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Now, just imagine how optimistic about his own release Joseph would have been as the cupbearer walked out. But as the days passed, his hopes would fade to the point where he realized the cupbearer is not going to put in a word for me to Pharaoh. So this was another setback for Joseph. You can see his ups and downs. But this would be a lesson in patience from which we can learn. He would be stuck in prison for another 2 years. But then, when the cupbearer heard that Pharaoh had had two puzzling dreams and was anxious to know their meaning, he remembered Joseph and mentioned him to Pharaoh. And when God delays doing something in our lives, it's not because he has forgotten us. When we are feeling impatient, we want to move on, we must never think, well, God doesn't know how we feel, he has forgotten us. And sometimes the delay is because he is also working in other people's lives and he's coordinating events so that things happen at the right time for all concerned. A house sale or purchase falling through. A failed job interview. Or a job offer which is then withdrawn can often work out for the best because another more suitable house or job emerges. It was very tough for Joseph to have to wait another 2 years, but although disappointed, there is no indication that he was bitter. He was still trusting God, waiting for him. The interpretation of Pharaoh's two dreams was of crucial importance. First, to the prosperity of Egypt. Second, to Joseph's prosperity. And third, to the prosperity of his long-lost family. Had he not stayed in prison for 2 more years, Pharaoh may not have known where to find him. Joseph might have been many miles away. God's timing is perfect. So Pharaoh told Joseph about his dreams, who then told him the meaning. Egypt was about to experience 7 years of great abundance of food, but 7 years of famine would follow. And Joseph went on to give Pharaoh practical advice. He gave him a plan. In short, he told Pharaoh to look for a wise man and put him in charge. And under him, commissioners should be appointed to collect a fifth of the harvest over the first 7 years and store up grain in reserve for the years of famine. Joseph was not putting himself forward for the job, but Pharaoh said to him, "There is no one discerning and as wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So we can see how things are working for Joseph. First of all, Potiphar puts him in charge of everything, and then in prison, the warder puts him in charge of everything, and now he's risen to the top. Now Pharaoh is putting him in charge of everything. It's a pity, really, isn't it, that we haven't got Joseph standing as a potential prime minister for us. The 7 years of abundance passed, and then came the famine, which we are told was so severe, not just in Egypt, but elsewhere. It was known that there was grain in Egypt, so people from other countries came to buy, including Joseph's 10 older brothers sent by Jacob. And like all visitors, on arrival, they bowed down to Joseph with their faces to the ground. Joseph instantly recognized them, but they did not recognize him. It was now more than 22 years since they had sold him to Midianite traders. Now, in the Genesis narrative, we are now at the beginning of chapter 41. But it is not until the beginning of chapter 45 that Joseph reveals to them his identity. And to conceal it, he was conversing with them through an interpreter so that he didn't have to speak to them in Hebrew. And it is after Joseph sees his brothers that we see his greatest demonstration of patience. It would be understandable if he had revealed himself at that first meeting to give them a piece of his mind. Surely a diatribe would have been in order. At length, giving vent to Joseph for resentment and bitterness stored up over more than two decades. Furthermore, he was in a position of great power and could have thrown them into prison. "You expect me to sell you grain? You must be joking. I've spent years in prison. See how you like it." But that was not at all how he felt towards them. He'd not forgotten how they had treated him, but he was conscious that God was in control. He was probably ready to forgive and forget, but now was not the time. He wasn't going to rush things for good reason. They were his half-brothers, all older, but Benjamin, the youngest son of Jacob, was his full brother, and they were both sons of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel, who died giving birth to Benjamin. And Benjamin had not been part of the plot against him all those years ago and had not accompanied his brothers now to Egypt. Joseph was obviously keen to be reunited with Benjamin and Jacob and wanted his brothers to return home to bring first Benjamin and then Jacob. And this needed careful planning. Meanwhile, he willingly gave his brothers the grain they wanted. Furthermore, he didn't want them to pay for it, but he could not let them have the grain free without giving a reason. So initially, he charged them for the grain and later and secretly returned the money to them. Also, he wanted to make sure that they were contrite about their atrocity towards him. And this had to be evident before he discovered they discovered who he was. So Joseph played a series of games with them, not out of malice, not out of mischief, but to achieve his aims. And therefore, at the first meeting, he spoke harshly to them and put them briefly in custody for 3 days. And with the exception of Simeon, whom Joseph required to stay behind as a guarantee that they would return with Benjamin, the other 9 brothers set off, each with a sack filled with grain. And Joseph also gave them provisions for their journey. When they later opened their sacks, they were horrified to discover that inside was the silver with which they had paid for the grain. It was therefore with some trepidation that they arrived back in Egypt with Benjamin. But Joseph's steward, who knew that they were innocent, reassured them. They then met Joseph again, who was so deeply moved at the sight of Benjamin that he had to rush out of the room and weep in private. He was still exercising patience because it must have been so compelling for him to tell Benjamin who he was. He did his weeping in private. Now, Simeon, of course, was now released, so all 11 brothers were preparing to return to Canaan with more grain. And once again, Joseph instructed the steward to put each man's silver inside their sacks, but to put Joseph's silver cup inside Benjamin's sack. He then arranged for them to be arrested at a short distance from where they had set out and brought back to be searched. I'm just going to read 3 verses, I think, from chapter 44. Joseph was still in the house when Judah and his brothers came in, and they threw themselves to the ground before him. Joseph said to them, "What is this you have done? Don't you know that a man like me can find things out by divination?" "What can we say to my lord?" Judah replied. "What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my lord's slaves, we ourselves and the one who was found to have the cup." But Joseph said, "Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who was found to have the cup will become my slave. The rest of you go back to your father in peace." It seems that although the brothers, of course, were innocent of the charge of stealing silver and the cup, they could not prove it. And Judah believed that this was punishment from God for their past sins. Why should Joseph play such a rotten trick? Why postpone a joyous reconciliation? The answer is that he wanted to see whether his brothers would now regard Benjamin, who in Joseph's absence had become the favorite son, whether they would regard him as dispensable as they had once regarded 17-year-old Joseph. But they passed the test Joseph set for them. Judah pleaded on behalf of Benjamin and said, "Let me remain here as your slave in place of the boy, and let him return with his brothers." At this point, Joseph had achieved what he set out to do, and he broke down and was able to tell his brothers, "I am Joseph." He must have been bursting to say this for a long time. What patience he had exercised. And we then go on to see his long-suffering attitude towards them. You see, he no longer had to pretend to be stern and was now able to show them affection. And in short, his message was, don't get upset. Everything is all right. And after an emotional reunion, his brothers returned to Canaan to fetch Jacob and his extended family. And they settled in Egypt, and Joseph gave them property in the best part of the land where they prospered. And he continued to govern the country wisely during the remaining years of famine. And Jacob lived there for 17 years and then died. Now, as we read earlier in the service, the death of Jacob made his brothers anxious. They feared that with Jacob no longer around, Joseph would pay them back for the wrong they did to him. And they begged his forgiveness, but they were mistaken in thinking Joseph was holding a grudge. He reassured them and spoke kindly. He said, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Jacob had left instructions with Joseph as to where he should be buried. This was a designated cave in Canaan, and Joseph and his brothers made the long journey to bury Jacob, and then they returned to Egypt. And the book of Genesis ends with the death of Joseph at the age of 110. And the very last verse mentions that he was embalmed and placed in a coffin in Egypt. But his story of patience rewarded is not over. There was one final demonstration. Like Jacob, he wanted to be buried in Canaan and gave instructions. He had remembered God's promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob of a land for their descendants. But unlike Jacob, he did not require a special excursion to Canaan for his burial. He was content to wait. His remains were to be left in Egypt and only removed from that country when it was time for all the Israelites to leave on their journey to the Promised Land. That would not happen until more than 400 years later. 400 years, or more than that. It was this act of faith for which Joseph was commended in Hebrews chapter 11. And it's remarkable that right at the end of the book of Joshua, we have an account first of the death of Joshua, and then two verses later, the burial of Joseph. Patience, indeed.